Nostalgic drinks can spark that happiness and relaxation, but also they can just be fun, and which is definitely what we all need right now. What is also interesting to say about nostalgia is that although we're all lusting after drinks that we remember, we also want them to be overhauled. So whether that's more in a sustainable way or a healthful way, or even to become much more indulgent. So there's definitely evolution in nostalgia as well.
That's Jen Creevy, our Director of Food and Drink, discussing the new nostalgia we're tracking right now in drinking culture. I'm Bethan Ryder, and this is the WGSN Create Tomorrow podcast. In this episode, myself and Jen were joined by Claire Lancaster, Head of Food and Drink, and Brielle Tujesi, strategist on our Insight platform, to discuss drinks trends across the demographics, from the boomers to Gen Z. We kicked off by reminiscing about our favourite cocktails of the 80s and 90s, and how the general mood of nostalgia that was sparked by the pandemic has trickled down into the drinks market.
So thinking back to the pandemic, that sparked a wave of nostalgia in many ways and many trends. And you can check out our podcast, episode 26, where we discuss this much more generally. But Jen, how is that playing out in drinks in particular?
Like you said, what we saw during the pandemic was a real wistful yearning for a return to either a real or an imagined past, and very much so for comfort and escapism amid all of the fear, the loss, and also the boredom for some in terms of the pandemic. But now, with the ongoing war in Ukraine, with the cost of living crisis and other regional stresses around the world, that desire for nostalgia is rising once again. So, you know, just out of interest, we saw, for example, searches for what is an espresso martini up 300% in 2021. So really, nostalgic drinks can spark that happiness and relaxation, but also they can just be fun, and which is definitely what we all need right now. I'll let Claire tell you about the Dirty Shirley cocktail emerging in New York in a second. But what is also interesting to say about nostalgia is that although we're all lusting after drinks that we remember, we also want them to be overhauled. So whether that's more in a sustainable way or a healthful way, or even to become much more indulgent. So there's definitely evolution in nostalgia as well. But Claire, do you want to explain the Dirty Shirley?
Sure. So the Dirty Shirley is an alcoholic spin on a really classic childhood drink in the UK called the Shirley Temple. So the cocktail version of it typically has vodka, lemon lime soda or ginger ale, and grenadine, which gives it this really bright red show-stopping color. And then it's topped with a fun maraschino cherry. So the New York Times published an article asking if it was the drink of the summer in May. And now we've seen the hashtag Dirty Shirley get over 11 million views on TikTok. And what we're really seeing is that this trend is being driven by Gen Z who's old enough to drink now, and millennials who are really, they enjoyed the mocktail when they were kids. And now as they're, you know, feeling quite nostalgic, like Jen's talked about, they're exploring alcoholic versions of those. So like Jen said, it really follows that popularity of the espresso martini back last summer. But this one's really a complete 180 in terms of taste and appearance. So, you know, it's just something different, but it still taps into that yearning for nostalgia. And that popularity can also really be a result of the longing for comfort and enjoyment that we're feeling in response to these hardships of the last few years, like Jen was saying. But this version really fits into those larger trends that we're seeing across the other WGSN directories. The popularity of decor with a real focus on fun. So we're seeing a return to maximalism in interiors, and you can really see that manifesting in food and drink with products like this and just these over-the-top dining experiences in 2022, really reflecting this desire for just joy and playfulness.
I'm glad to hear I'm not the only one with the espresso martini. I was away recently with a group of friends. I guess we're all Gen X, and we all got stuck into the espresso martini, although I don't think it had a kind of reboot. It was still very much the kind of classic, which Dick Bradsell, I think, created in the 80s. a good way to sort of stay awake, but also start to feel a little bit happy. Brielle, you've been covering drinks via different demographics on our Insight platform. So are you seeing, and we've already talked a little bit about Gen Z and millennials with nostalgia, but are you seeing that play out even more with any of those demographics?
Well, starting on the millennial front, we're seeing this interest in them going back to the nostalgic drinks specifically of their childhood, but now just with a healthier twist. So this is especially for those millennials that are in a life stage of becoming parents for the first time. And so they're inclined to share drinks of their own childhood now with their new children, and therefore share the flavors of their childhood with them as well. And so while they're looking for those lemonades, those chocolate milks, juices and sodas, et cetera, they're notably looking for the versions of them that are better for you. So things that are lower in sugar or higher in protein. So essentially, they're just fusing the comfort drinks and flavors of their youth, but now with their health priorities as parents. But then also on another front, there's this really interesting multi-generational nostalgia coming out between millennials and their boomer parents. Similarly in the way that nostalgia is coming out in boomers' taste in music or in vintage fashion. But now it's reverting back to those nostalgic flavors from boomer parents. So we're specifically seeing this in coffee, where many millennials are reaching to some of the more nostalgic coffee brands. Essentially, it's kind of become cool again to be a basic black coffee drinker in a world where everyone's drinking, right, their iced oat lattes. Saying that you drink it black can kind of be the sort of like badge of honor for young people. And Folgers actually ran a really great ad in this space by acknowledging that they were a boomer brand. You know, you kind of picture them with your parents, with your grandparents, but they're actually growing a lot more relevant for those nostalgic millennials as well.
You're listening to the WGSN Create Tomorrow podcast, and we're soaking up the current wave of flavour nostalgia in drinks. Next, Brielle explains the rise in no and low alcohol drinking and why the mindful drinking movement is on the increase among the younger generations. I mean, at the opposite end of the spectrum, as a Gen Xer that lives in Britain, I'd say that the low and no alcohol drinking, I may be generalising here, but it's a little bit of a foreign territory for me. So tell me a little bit about this sort of mindful drinking movement and who's adopting that.
Well, I think every generation is kind of taking mindful drinking and making it their own in some way. So obviously for Gen Z and millennials on the younger end of the spectrum, being sober or having a sober curious lifestyle is a lot more prominent and easier just culturally. So for Gen Z specifically, we're seeing them become really interested in non-alcoholic drinks that can still help them functionally unwind in some way. So this speaks to kind of rising levels of stress and anxiety, specifically with Gen Zers and younger millennials as well. So they're looking to kind of swap out the effects of alcohol for anxiety relief drinks. So things with CBD or other adaptogens as well. Now, millennials, they're the more calorie conscious generation. So they're looking for low alcohol drinks specifically that are low calorie or gluten free. Then, as you said, as consumers get older, they may not be as interested in the low or no alcohol movement, but they're still looking to drink more mindfully. And a lot of this just comes down to making drinking a more intentional activity. So rather than just being a daily habit after work, it becomes something really mindful, whether that's centered around getting together with your family and having a bottle of wine or other just simple moments of connection.
Okay, to drill down a little bit into the mindful drinking, Claire, what are the functional ingredients that are being used to sort of get this relaxation? We've mentioned CBD, but what are the other things that we're seeing there?
Yeah, so we're seeing ingredients like functional mushrooms and adaptogenic botanicals like kava, ashwagandha, magnesium, and others that are being joined often in formulations by vitamins and minerals in everything from sort of supplements and powdered mixes for coffee and tea to these ready-to-drink canned beverages. And one thing that we do a lot on the food and drink team is, you know, we take these insights that we're seeing and we do a lot of social listening. So it was really interesting during the pandemic that as we watch these levels of stress and anxiety hit highs, we saw a lot of interactions with posts containing the phrase mood boosting, which is completely unsurprising because we were all you know, struggling in the lockdowns. But what was really surprising was that engagement with low alcohol sort of followed that pattern. So what we saw was this was a reflection of a potentially longer term shift in the way that some people are thinking about the role of alcohol in stress relief. So while alcohol consumption has and of course continues to be associated with stress relief for many consumers, particularly for the younger demographics, we're seeing an increasing number expressing interest in low alcohol, even amid these historic levels of stress and anxiety. So we're really seeing that correlation as suggesting that even as stress reaches an all-time high, people are looking to cut back on their alcohol because of concerns about its negative mood-related impacts and those side effects, including, you know, the dreaded anxiety-exacerbating hangover. So again, we're seeing drinks brands respond with these really condition-specific formulas that are focused on calm, relaxation, mood, and sleep support, things that really help people battle burnout, boost happiness, or wind down, or relax, but also with the idea that you want to sleep and rejuvenate yourself.
It's the WJSN Creates Tomorrow podcast, and the topic we're discussing in this episode is drinking culture. I asked Jen Creevy, our Director of Food and Drink, if the climatarian diet, a key trend for 2022, which WJSN called out, transfers to drinking culture. We've written a lot on WJSN about the climatarian diet, and I just wonder how much consumers are really caring about the climate when it comes to drinking as well. And does this apply to drink? And I mean, one thing that I did think of is it back to the wine box of the 70s, because it's kind of a good way to sort of purchase wine, it reduces packaging long term. Jen, is conscious consumption something we're seeing where it comes to drinks?
Yeah, so it definitely applies to drinks just as much as it does food. So yeah, conscious consumption is something that we've been forecasting for a while at WJSN, and particularly of note to those younger generations. You know, so Gen Z are dubbed the sustainability generation, and they really pay close attention to a brand's stance on social and also environmental issues. So yeah, we're absolutely seeing it. So you mentioned packaging, Bethan. So definitely different types of materials. Boxes absolutely are being premiumized. So we're seeing that in terms of wine, but also the ingredients themselves. So it's things like the rise of climate friendly and regenerative ingredients. In terms of packaging, it's obviously the materials, but it's also reusable, and also making sure whatever product and packaging you have, it can be recycled to your particular area. Upcycled ingredients is another one that that brands are using. And also, we also forecast the rise of waterless formats, which are, again, another interesting take on sustainability. And then also, as well as all the environmental issues, brands are supporting various social issues. And that's really important, particularly to the Gen Zs. But, you know, taking all that into account, I would still come back to the fact that drinks have to be fun, you know, particularly going out, enjoying spending time with friends and family. They do have to be fun. And also, mixologists are now using some of these sustainable ingredients, for example, spirulina, in their cocktails to create not only a sustainable drink, but also something fun. So spirulina is a climate friendly and regenerative ingredient. It's also packed with nutrients, but it also makes the cocktail an amazing colour of blue. So you can really have fun with some of these ingredients. It doesn't always have to be about the sort of serious issues.
I mean, talking about these different formats, I recently have noticed also a lot of pre-mixed canned drinks, canned cocktails, which I think in the height of mixology in the kind of 90s and noughties would have been, you know, that pre-mixed cocktail thing was such a sort of, you would never do that. But it's obviously come back. And I read on our site that it's the fastest growing spirits category in 2021. Is this evolving more? Is this sort of really a big boom time for pre-mixed canned cocktails? Brielle?
Well, I think for younger consumers, there was this really interesting spark for RTDs, ready-to-drink cocktails, because it had this natural element of discovery to it. And, you know, thanks to the internet, millennials and Gen Zs have kind of been in this constant discovery mode for most of their lives. So with RTDs, it allowed that online discovery to move into an IRL space where you could walk through your grocery store, easily find and explore different flavors or ingredient combinations, but at the same time, it was really convenient to try them and it had a very low barrier to entry. But at the same time, we do know that millennials and Gen Z eat what they eat and drink is very integrated into their identity. And so having a branded RTD can or bottle can help you aestheticize or build a lifestyle around some of the drinking choices that they're making. So whether that is a drink brand that calls out its health benefits that you're really interested in, or one that hits on exciting drink trends that shows that you're maybe a little bit more exploratory with the things that you drink, being able to hold a can that speaks to those things or to post a picture on Instagram about it or just open it in front of a group of friends, those little gestures could be actually a really important tool to signal some of the things that you believe in.
What's interesting to me about this is with millennials and Gen Z, right, they're the sort of native digital generation. They don't like waiting for stuff, right? It's got to be, they're used to now. Do you think there's also an element of that? Because for me, initially having a cocktail was about being in a bar, watching a barman do it, and kind of your mouth salivating, you're waiting for the cocktail. And this just seems to be a very different way. As you say, it's more about the social media and the instant gratification, which is very much part of this demographic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the convenience aspect of it is huge. Also being able to kind of trim down your at-home cocktail bar or your at-home, you know, fridge essentials of what you need to make a drink when you have friends over, being able to really curate that down to something that speaks to what you want. And also, as you said, it's very convenient to open. Those are all really important things to younger consumers.
I heard a fun fact about that actually from a mixologist who said back in the 80s, they used to spend around 7 minutes making a cocktail. And now they train their staff to make a cocktail in 2 minutes because people just will not wait.
To the point about convenience, I think convenience, like everyone's been saying, and this sort of impatientness to get exactly what you want when you want it is like a huge driver of this category. But I also think that when we saw the biggest growth in this category popping up was at the height of the pandemic. People didn't have the option to go out to bars. So, you know, I think that was a huge driver into this. And then like Brielle was saying, now there's also the price consideration. So it's both the reality of, you know, maybe that kickstarted this sort of trend to drinking in the home. But now, you know, the option with the rising cost of living to actually go to a bar or to live in a city center where you're able to go is increasingly something that's unattainable to younger consumers, but they still are connected online and, you know, they want a piece of part of this experience. And I think these RTDs are bringing those experiences and allowing consumers outside of those very expensive city centers to participate in these trends. So, you know, in some ways, it's definitely this rise of impatience. And in others, you know, these are an opportunity, I think, to sort of democratize the idea of having a bartender quality drink in your own home. But, you know, I think that's a big driver of the trend is also this bartender quality pour at an affordable price point. You know, as it evolves, I think we're going to continue to see brands looking to find a niche. This market is really crowded right now, and premiumization is going to be the focus going forward. It is that idea of having something that equals what you could get in a bar in your home. So we're seeing innovator brands highlighting, you know, natural flavors, premium distilled spirits, and qualities like organic or gluten-free or lower sugar formulations. So ingredient transparency and sustainability callouts, those sorts of things will speak to these rising consumer interests in these premium options. These drinks are really now trying to position themselves as equal to what you could get in a bar. And I think to your point, Bethan, that's sort of that's helped this evolution on from these being like really kind of quite unappealing, nasty, very sugary, very artificial beverages to now being something that's, you know, really quite high in quality. So it started particularly in the US with this explosion of hard seltzers, which were kind of an evolution of an alco pop, but, you know, positioned slightly better. But now it's really transitioning towards this broader variety of sophisticated canned cocktails, meeting this demand for drinks in these global flavors and styles that reflect these generations, you know, their own diversity and their eagerness for this culinary discovery and exploration that Brielle was talking about.
I think it's interesting. One I have tried is because he's full disclosure, a friend, Oliver Payton, who ran the Atlantic Bar, which is where the Sea Breeze kind of took off. He brought Absolut Vodka to the UK, right? He's actually launched, I didn't know they're called RTDs, but he's launched his own. It's called Unknown Pleasures, which I think also ties in very nicely, Brielle, to that whole thing about people discovering these drinks and the discovery level of that. And he's done that with Dre Masso, who is a big mixologist as well. And I have to say, their espresso martini did, you know, they're very good quality drinks. I think it's quite interesting that people with that heritage of the cocktail renaissance in the UK and the US are tapping into this. It suggests that it is a quality thing that's here to stay. And I think the other thing, Claire, which you were saying about the democratization of it, it's also, of course, this outdoor living thing that we are, the outdoor boom, right? People, that has continued, that is behaviour that's stuck post-COVID. And there's nothing nicer than sitting on a beach or on a picnic blanket and having a premium quality RTD cocktail when there's no barman in sight. So I'm applauding them anyway.
Yeah, exactly. It is really nice. And as you say, the outdoor boom is definitely... ushered these along. Is, you know, when we first were able to leave our houses or our apartments during the pandemic, the only place you could go was to sit in a park for a while with your friends. And that just, you know, it gave this sort of space the time it needed to develop. And I think bartenders who were largely out of work at that time just saw this as an amazing opportunity. And now the quality is so high that it's kind of hard to not see it as a future.
I'm Bethan Ryder, your host on the WGSN Create Tomorrow podcast. We're taking a deep dive into drinking culture in this episode. I asked our WGSN experts what spirits and liquors are going to be the next big thing, and will gin's popularity continue to grow? Okay, so the question that I think everyone always wants to know when we talk about alcoholic drinks or flavours generally, actually, is what's the new gin? I know, having spoken to Jen, her and I have been quite enjoying the margaritas during lockdown, partly because they're so easy to make. Who knew? And I know for top trends, we called out the Chinese spirit baijiu as a top trend this year. So how has that evolved? Claire, what are we seeing? I can see gin, certainly in the UK, is going to run, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, what's next, and that's our real focus here. But I think there are these classic categories that people will continue to be drawn to. But there's still evolution within those categories. So gin, which does continue to be very popular in markets like the UK, we're just seeing more craft spirit brands emerging, continuing to evolve those classics. We're seeing a lot of brands using unique botanical blends, harnessing a widening range of flavors and influences from around the world to help them stand out in this very crowded market. As people, you know, continue to drink in their homes, they are looking for that premiumization we talked about earlier, and that's a real route that we're seeing spirit brands follow. But when it comes to cocktails and spirits that sort of do go beyond the classics, we're really keeping an eye on products that have these cultural ties to lesser explored regions and culinary cultures. We see these increasingly moving around the world as ready-to-drink products, not only for their convenience, but because it's this fun way to explore really unfamiliar drinks without requiring that culinary know-how. So you can, you know, do it in the privacy of your own home. You kind of don't have to be embarrassed to mispronounce something at a bar. It just comes to you, and brands are doing a lot in terms of really storytelling and making it this real act of discovery. So we expect to see more of these transportive flavors and styles that draw from, and they also complement the global cuisines that are favored by many consumers today. So margarita style drinks that you mentioned, when people are, you know, eating, having a taco night at home, having some premium tequila and mezcal, but also maybe people are willing to explore some lesser known Mexican spirits. We've seen a lot of Sotol brands crop up. Sotol's this, it's a plant that's comparable sort of to agave, which is where tequila comes from. It's from the northern Mexican regions of Chihuahua and Durango, and it's made from this plant called the Desert Spoon. But we're seeing brands like this brand in Austin called Desert Door offering this sort of made in Texas sotols from a local strain. But they're accenting it with lemongrass, which is, you know, bringing an East Asian flavor into it. And it's more creamy than some of those hard tequila or mezcal offerings. And we're also seeing quite a lot of accessible sake cocktails and sake seltzers, you know, which it completely makes sense because people love to eat sushi at home. You know, so why wouldn't you want an already prepared, really ideal pairing to have when you take it home? And then we are also seeing a lot of botanical and bitter Mediterranean aperitif inspired stuff. People are having ingredients like bitter orange and herbs or gentian root, and they're just bringing that little flavor of the summer, having just a little sip when you're at home.
Okay, so it wouldn't be WGSN if we didn't perhaps touch upon drinking in the metaverse right now. I've been reading a little bit about NFT drinks platforms for collectors. What else is happening, Jen? Is this is there a lot of scope here for brands and brand opportunities?
Yeah, it's a really exciting space, and one that we're getting questions about all the time in terms of what should we do around the metaverse. And we're seeing brands like Coca-Cola launch limited edition flavors in Fortnite, or Absolut Vodka launching virtual bars in Decentraland. So it's really exciting. But what I think is most interesting is the community-led projects that we're seeing. So innovators are co-creating products with their audiences, and that's something that's really starting to rise. So we've seen brands like the functional beverage brand Taika ran a decentralized product development project whereby NFT holders voted on their preferred recipe and packaging. So it's really about creating a community before you've even launched a product. So you've already got that audience there to launch your product into. Another one is coffee subscription service Bored Breakfast Club, which is funded by NFTs, and it hosts in real life breakfast pop-ups. So I think those are the things that are really interesting around the metaverse. It's really these community-led projects that are, you know, allowing customers to co-create products. So really creating the perfect product that they would want to find. But if I can add another point around the metaverse, there's obviously a lot of concern around sustainability and NFTs and the metaverse due to the high energy intensive process of blockchain and cryptocurrency. But drinks brands are working on this. Well, not only drinks brands, a lot of brands are working on this. One example is, so like the regenerative wine industry, which have obviously been practicing sustainable processes for years. So they are looking to enter the metaverse, but in a sustainable way. So one example from the States is Cuvée Collection, which is launching a wine NFT members club. And they have really searched and looked around to find a sustainable blockchain company. So they ultimately partnered with Flow Blockchain by a company called Dapper Labs, and an external survey by Deloitte in its energy consumption review found that this Flow Blockchain, minting each of those luxury NFTs, uses less energy than a Google search or an Instagram post. So they really have searched around to find the best way, because they know that trying to get the younger generations interested in wine will mean meeting the younger generations in a different way to the way that they already meet their older generations. So I think that's an interesting part of drinks brands and the metaverse.
I'm guessing that it's an exciting space as well because of all the kind of things that have suffered during lockdown. I feel like certainly alcohol, whether it's boom or bust, generally doesn't take a hit from people. People find a way to drink, whether there's an upturn or a downturn in the economy. I just wanted to ask what you'll all be drinking this summer to end. I'm very darling that I don't seem to be able to move away from Provençal Rosé. But what about you, Jen?
So I'm also quite boring in this space. As you mentioned earlier, I'm very much still in my margarita phase, although I am experimenting with the mezcals and the sotols, as Claire explained. So slightly more experimental. I've also been training my son to make them for me, which I probably shouldn't admit, but there we go. So that's where I am this summer.
I must try the sotol. I'm quite excited about that. Is it as good as everyone says tequila doesn't really give you a hangover because it's so pure? Is that similar? Is that quite a nice pure spirit?
I would say so. Yeah, it's. I would try it on its own first before having it in a margarita. But as Claire said, it is a little bit more creamy. It really depends how much you drink, though, Bethan.
I'm not sure about that stat about tequila not giving you a hangover either. I don't know if that's true.
Brielle, what are you drinking? It sounds like you're maybe a bit healthier than Jen and myself.
Well, I think I'm just a very stereotypical Gen Zer. If it's a daytime, I'm reaching for that iced oat latte. And if it's night, it's really just whatever new, trendy, non-alcoholic brand I can find in the grocery store.
Claire, what about you? What are you looking to be refreshing yourself with this summer?
So I'm also, I'm pretty loyal to the tequila myself as well, but I've been trying this one that we called out on the site a while ago. It's a sort of West Texas cocktail called Ranch Water, and it comes ready to drink. So it's in a can, but it's got tequila, sparkling water, lime juice, and jalapeno. And then I just pour it in a can, and I rim the glass with a bit of tahine, chili, salt, lime for an extra sort of spicy kick. And it takes about 30 seconds after work, and it is incredible. So maybe we can get you on the RTDs soon, Bethan.
Thanks to Jen, Claire and Brielle for taking time to speak to us today, and thanks for listening. If you're a WGSN subscriber, you'll find reports covering many of the topics we touched upon on our site, from drinking habits across the demographics on the Insight platform to key trends and flavours on food and drink. If you want to find out how to subscribe, head over to WGSN.com to discover how you can get access to our service. We're constantly publishing new content focusing on how we can design a brighter, better future for our industries, and that's including food and drink, interiors, beauty, fashion and consumer tech. You can subscribe to this podcast on all major podcast platforms. And if you like what you've heard, why not leave us a rating and review on iTunes? That just leaves me to thank our podcast producer, Roland Bonham. And then to you, happy, safe or mindful drinking wherever you're based.